Off the ball. Rugby.
What Joey Barrett has brought to the club, the performances he's had, the punch that he gives, is another dimension on what Robbie's game is. That's the reality.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Wrap on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening. You're welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We're going to be speaking to Anthony Nash from 7:30 to discuss the weekend's hurling. Clare now hanging on by a thread in the quest for Liam McCarthy this summer. From 8 to 9, we're going to have Colin Boyle and Darren O'Sullivan with us to break down the Ulster and Leinster finals over the weekend. Both absolutely brilliant spectacles, brilliant games of football. And then on the football show after 9, we'll take Nathan Murphy into studio and he'll talk about the boos for Trent Alexander-Arnold and the bizarre Maranakis, Nuno Espirito Santo confrontation yesterday. And we'll get Graham Hunter up on the line as well to talk about yesterday's thrilling Clásico, where Barcelona have as good as won La Liga for 2024-2025. We would love to hear your thoughts on the weekend sport. 0879 180 180 is our WhatsApp number. Stephen Doyle, a very good evening to you.
Good evening, Owen.
Mick McCarthy, how are things?
Hello, guys.
You might get to your Clare heartbreak in just a moment,
well,
but I think
we don't have time.
We talk about the Moose.
The Moose has unfortunately been usurped as well. I mean, Stephen Doyle was getting ready to put together a brilliant news round reflecting on the weekend sport and then bombshell news from the world of racing, Steve-O.
Indeed, yes. Rachel Blackmore has released a statement to announce that she's retiring from professional racing after 16 years. The 35-year-old from Tipperary became a trailblazer as a female jockey from her first professional win aboard Most Honourable at Clonmel in September 2015. She went on to win the 2021 Grand National aboard Minella Times at Aintree, becoming the first female jockey to win the race. A year later, she guided A Plutard to the ultimate prize at the Cheltenham Festival, the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and in total, she rode 18 winners at Prestbury Park. She doesn't give any reasons as to why she's chosen to do this now, nor any indication as to what's next. In the statement, she says, "I feel the time is right. I'm sad, but I'm also incredibly grateful for what my life has been for the past 16 years. I just feel so lucky to have been legged up on the horses I have." Hanging up her, I was going through this in this office earlier, like footballers and rugby players hang up the boots. Tennis players hang up the racket. You hang up the cue, maybe, if you're a snooker player. I'm not sure about jockeys. Are you hanging up the
saddle?
It's the syrups, I think.
Oh, it's the syrups.
That's, now, again, it was only, Steve, I did say this to me earlier, and I hadn't a clue, and it was only when I tried to remember what syrups were that I realised I'd heard that expression before. So I could be wrong. Text us in if I am, but yes. I have a feeling that jockeys hang up the syrups.
It's not, okay, hanging up the silks, maybe?
Yeah, maybe that.
I don't know. I'm claiming to be some sort of racing expert here. Like, this is we're in a fascinating place because it's one of these rare Irish sporting careers where I feel we have appreciated this
at the time,
yeah, year after year after year, because what she has done has been so extraordinary.
I completely agree. Like, Steve, I was reading out the script there, and it's like she's the first to everything.
Yeah,
you know, and like. Sometimes we don't appreciate trailblazers in their time, and sometimes we don't realise what they've achieved until after they're gone and so on. But I think you're right, Owen. I don't think that's been the case with Rachel Blackmore at all. But still and all, it's worth sometimes, like, you know, looking at the totality of it. And it's like the 18 Cheltenham winners you mentioned there, you know, which is incredible. But it's also like, it's not like she's winning kind of like any old races. Like, she's won the big race on all 4 days. You know what I mean? She's won a Gold Cup. She won 2 champion hurdles. She's won a champion chase. She won the Stayers hurdle, is technically the big race on the Thursday. They never really found a big race for that, but she won that. If it's not that, it's the Ryanair chase, which she won twice. Do you know what I mean? She has all of the big races and the Grand National. You know, that was one of the most... That era, 2021 and 2022, where you couldn't watch a race without Rachel Blackmore making history. You know... Think about it, even just in terms of like racing's kind of like somewhat diminished impact on the sporting conversation. And yet, you know, Sports Personality of the Year, BBC World Personality in that year as well, you know, because of the achievement she had. It was just, appreciated in her time, thankfully. But like, I think it's worth reflecting on it today as well, like, because unbelievable and such a surprise and disappointing announcement. Like, great for her. And like, you know, you want people to make the best decision, but just from a pure, like, cold hard, like, sporting point of view, taking the personality out of it at all, it's such a loss to Irish sport.
Yeah, she like she mentions in the statement as well, she lists off all the horses, the great horses that she rode upon to get those winners. And, you know, after thanking all the great trainers like Shark O'Hanlon, Henry de Bromhead, Willie Mullins, like she says in the statement, she just doesn't have enough page space to thank everybody she wants to, but she mentions some key people. The one thing always struck me about Rachel Blackmore, and she's been on Off the Ball many times doing interviews after her big successes, like she's got a really, really lovely personality. She comes across as a really nice person. She's she carries herself so well as a professional sports elite athlete. But I think that also underlying there is a really hard as nails, determined competitor. Yeah. Because you don't get to where she got to without having that real, you know, just that hardy kind of nature about you. And we all know how hard and how dangerous the sport is.
Mm, yeah.
And the fact that she, you know, as I said, she always comes across this really nice, gentle soul, but there's a really hardy woman underneath all that, yeah. I think, as well.
That's the thing you'd have to say at the end of a great racing career is just congratulations, not only on the success, but also there, I'm sure there's a big part of like, geez, you got out of this relatively unscathed. And
yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. And a decent age and, you know, didn't stay on too long. Like,
yeah, it'd be interesting to, I know when John Duggan did his piece with Davy Russell around his book last year, his list of injuries that he picked up throughout his career was just astonishing. So I say the phrase relatively unscathed because the thing with jockeys is not only are some of their injuries very obvious, they go through astonishing pain and go through ridiculous injuries that we've probably never even heard of. Mm. And I'm sure those stories will come out when hopefully she does a good few interviews over the course of these next few weeks.
Yeah, and like, I mean, we keep saying the first one I've ever mentioned, like, you know, the just simply the fact that she's a woman, you know what I mean? And it's not an unheard of thing in horse racing for there to be female jockeys. And we've had great ones. And you think of like Katie Walsh and Nina Carberry and loads more, even just in Ireland alone. And they've been outstanding and they've had amazing achievements. And you look at Blackmore's record and like it's so far and away ahead. It's like we're talking kind of like Katie Taylor amateur boxing kind of levels here in terms of how far she is ahead of everybody else, all of her peers and all the people that came before her. You know, so I think that it's just worth mentioning again that we're kind of like talking as if like she just had this kind of like career on its own. Like she's such a unbelievable trailblazer for what she did for her sport.
Dylan in Cork has been in touch to say that jockeys hang up their saddles. So I guess I get the point on that particular quiz if Dylan is the person who knows more than we do. I'm going to take that as gospel.
Different saddle for every horse? Mm. They don't. Do they have a saddle?
A saddle that they use all the time. Listen.
I don't think they have stirrups either. Like, it's not like, I think it's like boots, I suppose, like the same as everybody else should be the answer.
It's an absolute disgrace that Rachel Blackmore did not close off her statement with, I am finally hanging off the X so we could, you know, put this debate to bed once and for all. Right, the news round is here with you with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. We are going to turn our attention to yesterday afternoon. So talk to us about the reaction to Lough's first win in a long, long time in Leinster.
Oh, the wee county waiting 68 years for a day like yesterday. And there were incredible scenes at Croke Park. Just to put some perspective on it, Lough's last Leinster final win was 2 months before Jailhouse Rock by Elvis Presley was released.
I was looking this up.
That came out in September 1957, 2 months after Lough won that Leinster final.
I had the number
July
one and I've forgotten it. I sent it to you. Do you have it there?
I'll get it up here. You sent it to me. It was...
It's a comedy act, like really, really
like the Beatles hadn't
stuff.
Even been invented at this stage.
No.
Gambling man / putting on the style.
By...
Lonnie Donegan.
Lonnie Donegan. Yeah, there sure, you was, go. Yeah. I knew Steve would have some appreciation for that, even if you didn't know him.
A skiffle legend from Liverpool.
Of course, Lonnie Donegan.
Well, he's a skiffle legend from Liverpool who would have been a big influence on the Beatles. Had a great. His biggest hit was Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavour on the Bedpost Overnight?
Right.
There you go.
They should have played that at full time yesterday. That would have been quite a niche thing. There would have been one person in the ground, Stephen Doyle, who got it, like applauding. Well done, PA.
They were crowned 2025 champions after a tense but entertaining battle with neighbours Meath, winning by 3-14 to 1-18. The team brought the Delaney Cup to RD, Drogheda and Dundalk last night as celebrations carried on late into the night. The last 10 minutes of the game, incredible as Meath scored a goal to go a point up with 7 minutes to play. But inspirational captain Sam Mulroy nailed a 2-point free 3 minutes later to put his side in front before a late Craig Lennon point sealed a 2-point win. Lough manager Gerard Brennan, he was speaking to our man Tommy Rooney after the match and was keen to highlight the desire of his players in the panel.
58 years is a long time, and I've been up there now into my second season, and you get an appreciation of how much they love the football and how much they wanted it. And while I'm the fortunate one to be there at the moment in terms of someone has to manage it, but I have to give massive credit to the players. The amount of work that they put in, their enthusiasm to learn, their desire to get better. And it's just incredible, it's second to none, and it's something I haven't experienced before. They're never happy, they just want more.
And they could get more because they'll fancy their chance in the quarterfinals. Going into a group to play Clare, Monaghan and Down. Runners-up Meath have a tougher group with Kerry, Roscommon and Cork. I should mention as well, Dublin's dominance ended in the men's Leinster competition, obviously, but not in the women's. Meath beaten by the Dubs 213 to 112 before that game, as the Capitals women won a 12th consecutive title. And Galway got the bragging rights and the trophy after beating Mayo in the Connacht women's football final. Two first-half goals helping the Tries women pass their neighbours by 213 to 9 points. In tune.
We talk about the match, but the atmosphere in Croke Park yesterday was just unbelievable. And like when you consider like the conversations we've been having for the last two or three years at this time of year are like, why are we not playing real football games at this time of year? We need to get into it. And then you actually see the game Saturday night, but especially yesterday, like heaving. Like I've never seen that in like the parade. During the parade, the hill, it was like, you know, in a computer game where people in the crowd, they're not really focused on it, you know, like in FIFA or something like that, and they're just bouncing up and down. The hill was like that. It was just this patch of green and the patch of red, and they were just sort of jumping up. It was like they couldn't contain their own excitement. It was like there was just this like unbelievable like fire in the belly of all the fans. You were at it. Like, was it, I'd say it was an unreal day.
It was absolutely amazing. Like the whole experience around the game was phenomenal. I was around Fagan's before the game. Like there was a man in a half Louth, half Meath jersey with a Joe Sheridan mask. And I was like, that just sums up today perfectly. That is the icon of this. A lot of signs with the goal. Joe Sheridan says hello. Like we were up in Louth during the week. I was up in RD. I was up in Tully Allen and Dundalk. And it was amazing how there was a common thread of the 2010 thing can be put to bed if we win this weekend. I hadn't quite realised how significant that was in everybody's thoughts. They all like to say it's ancient history, but no, they were pretty forthright about the fact that we would finally be able to resign this to history if we managed to get the job done on Sunday. And they did, but the colour was amazing. Like, as I say, flares in Drumcondra, green flares in Drumcondra at around 12, 1 o'clock. And like, just kind of a reminder that we have a very unique thing in Gaelic football where in the space of 2.5 months, we should have 5 very meaningful trophies handed out and 5 very high stakes scenarios. Now, the reality is that we only have 4 this year, but 4 out of 5 ain't bad, where we saw the emotion on Saturday in Clonus, the heaps of emotion yesterday from the Louth fans. We saw the emotion from Pádraig Joyce and co last week, and we will see it again in an All-Ireland final in July, the Munster final being the exception. But it's not every sport that has this collection of different trophies that are handed out in such quick succession. And this is the best year of football I can ever remember, really, because you have the, how do we call it, a stagnant year for Dublin coming into line along with a brand new sport, and those two factors together have just injected fresh life into the summer. And if we have summers that are like this in the next few years, and this is the new normal, then this is absolutely fantastic.
Well, we went into the year already thinking like we're in this beautiful place, that new rules happened to come in at a time when there was unbelievable parity, that there was like, if you go by the league, which you wouldn't normally, but I think it also does play out, that there's 7 teams could win the All-Ireland. And then you add in like, so like the likes of Meath and Louth coming on, Cork seemingly improving, you know, like it just adds, every game just feels a little bit more dramatic, as well as arguably better to look at. Although I wonder about a lot of yesterday, like a lot of yesterday didn't, it wasn't rules dependent, I suppose. Maybe the goals probably were a little bit more, and there is that chance for the fast, the kickouts. And I suppose like Meade's goal, which nearly turned the game in the head, was due to a fast break that you wouldn't have seen in other years. But
well, the
stagnant play
the
still
end.
Happened.
Yeah.
Sorry. I suppose I specifically mean the opening up of the game in the new rules, as opposed to the kickout or the 2-point version. But at the same time, it was very dramatic. I do think the hooter takes away from it a little bit, you know. Every single game I'm watching without fail, I'm looking at the clock going 68 minutes, there's 2 points in it, God, there's, I wonder how long's left. And it's like as if I, my brain is just not triggered to realise that there's exactly a minute and a half left, and that's how long there is. And I think it takes away from some of the drama. I know we like to, like, I mean, we're better off having certainty and so on, but I do think that if there's 68 minutes gone and out of the ball and there's probably about 5 minutes left, but we don't know exactly, I just feel that that's a little bit, I think it's a better way of playing it, I have to say.
I think it adds to the drama, to be honest with you.
The looter does.
Yeah, it does, yeah. I think the sense of finality.
Just realise the game's over. It was like in the Dublin Meath game, it was sort of like Dublin are back in it, and then you're like, oh no, hold on, there's actually no chance here. Meath have already won this game.
I think it adds a sense of pressure to a lot of the players, especially for the Louth players there yesterday afternoon, knowing that they had this amount of time to hold on to the ball and the risk-reward nature of trying to keep ball in the end. I think it's actually spectacular theatre. The pace of the game is different to the kind of helter-skelter nature that we've seen in other games.
But they've not tried to do that anyway, though. You know, if it was in injury time, say, for example.
Yeah, but if you hold on to it and the hooter goes, you know, once you're in possession of that ball, you can kick it out of play and that's it, it's all done.
I do like the boot out of play rugby style.
Gerard Brennan said it in the post-match. He said that it was something they'd worked on. And he also referenced the fact that Donegal looked like they'd worked on it as well from how they played the previous night. So
I saw some people giving out about that. I wouldn't mind. I agree with you that was dramatic because like Meade needed to get the ball back and needed to do everything for it. There was that's a tough thing to do, to hold the ball like that these days. So I wouldn't argue with that. There was some slowish kind of like monotonous play in some parts of the game. But overall, like I think the atmosphere, the history, and some of the football and some of the scores and all like that brought that. Like, that was a classic.
I think so. And also, they were going to be the two big tests for the new rules. A, Croke Park, and B, really high stakes, because you didn't really get that in the league quite a lot. But I think that was probably the best game of football under the new rules that we've seen in Croke Park so far. Because I think the league final weekend was a bit of a bum note, to be honest. But I think that was just spectacular. Just while we're on Gaelic games, just a quick word on Clare on Saturday. I know you were down in Ennis at this. Shame that it clashed with the Ulster final in terms of people being able to properly enjoy this. I was astonished that Clare did not win this game after they managed to claw back to 12 points.
Do you know what? At the time, I remember Mark Rogers standing over free to equalise, and there was a kind of there was a lot of delays in the second half. There was a lot of, like, I mean, I remember there was a sideline, took 5 minutes to take it, and immediately free. And there was a lot of kind of angstiness in the Clare fans. And I remember there was a few people around me says, like, we're going to equalise here. There's 6-7 minutes left. We could win this by 3 or 4. You know what I mean? And I remember never really thinking that. And I've often seen it in sport when you have a big comeback, you give everything, you get level. Do you remember Ireland 2015 World Cup? Like, absolute disaster. Everybody's injured. They're getting hammered by Argentina. They came out in the second half and got back into that game and got level, as far as I remember, or something close to level, or maybe even ahead. They got 3 tries, I think, and it was just this incredible thing. And then Argentina would just like pick them off for the rest of the game because you just give everything in you to get back to. So the biggest, the original sin here is conceding 4 goals the first 20 minutes and going down by 12 points. You know, there's just no way back. Like, they did get back, as you say, but like the chances are you're not going to get away with it. Like, you know.
Have you written it off? Or
I don't think they're that complicated. It's funny. I remember thinking, like, immediately is like, if head to head's a thing, there is a chat. I don't think they're all mad things to happen.
No,
I expect Tip to beat Waterford. I think there's a very good chance Cork beat Limerick, and then it comes down to a showdown between Clare and Limerick, more or less. It's just whether Clare have shown the kind of form to knock Limerick out of the championship. You know, because that's what it would be. It wouldn't be a case of Limerick sneaking in and both of them getting through. We'd be knocking Limerick out of the championship. And I just don't see it. I just don't see it. They're not in the kind of form they're showing. There were some great moments. It wasn't a bad, it was a great occasion. Like, I know Croke Park was amazing, but there's 20,000 people packed in. Beautiful day. Like, just a beautiful day. Ennis was absolutely hopping beforehand. Tip feel like they're back. There was a good Tip crowd there. I was in Thurles last year where there was like 16,000 people at the match or something. Tip had given up, you know. So it all really was exciting, and there was some lovely moments in it. You know, like Tony Kelly's kick up, like when Shane O'Donnell came on, the ground lifted. It was incredible.
So
it was
just such a tight ground, isn't it? Brilliant having the supporters like so close to the pitch and the players.
The wait for Shane O'Donnell to come on, like, you know what I mean? And again, yeah, as you say, it's all so tight that you just, the atmosphere was brilliant, but all in all, it just looks like it's just going to be a down season. There's
Lowen looked a bit
pity.
He looked really kind of downhearted in the post-match interview and off the ball. And I think he knows the injuries as well have really affected him this season.
You understand, it's injuries and then other things. It's like Aidan McCarthy is like, you know, he might not be having the best year of his career, but he's well worth his place on the panel/squad, and he's playing Clare Cup for Aina Kilnamona the day of the match, like, and nobody really knows why. And, you know, I kind of think that sort of stuff, you don't let things like that happen during the season. If you're running a tight ship and you're in that kind of mode where everything's going right and we're all pulling together, those kind of things, be it a falling out or whatever it is, don't really happen. And it's just a sign, like, you kind of saw that. There was a picture, Clare Champion put up a picture of him. They knew what they were doing. And, playing the club match that morning. And, you know, everyone's in the pub beforehand and you're kind of like, there's something not right there.
Something's not right. Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Steve-O, you do have news for us on Caelan Doris and how long he's going to be out for.
Yeah, the Leinster and Ireland captain could now be a doubt for the Autumn Nations series. His province revealed earlier that his spell on the sidelines could be between 4 and 6 months, which would take him up to near mid-November. After missing out on line selection, his participation in those Autumn Test matches now not assured, as Ireland faced New Zealand in Chicago on November 1st before hosting Japan, Australia and South Africa in Dublin on the following 3 weekends. And meanwhile, Australia head coach Joe Schmidt's been giving his assessment of the line squad picked by Andy Farrell last week. He's impressed with the depth and is eager to see which team is picked to play Argentina in Dublin on June 20th before they head down under. The former Ireland and Leinster boss feels Farrell picked on form.
You got 15 Irishmen, 12 Leinstermen. You got 12 English, and I think a lot of those combinations will mix and match really well. Obviously, 8 Scots and 2 Welsh, which kind of probably reflects the recent form over the last 12 months. But I think there's some dangerous combinations in there that will be quite formidable.
Yeah, Joe Schmidt speaking there. Steve-O, you were on duty for yesterday's Premier League meeting between Liverpool and Arsenal, and Trent Alexander-Arnold, the story from yesterday, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, honestly, taken aback on when I heard the boos for the right back. He's been one of the club's best players, playing a huge part in the 2 Premier League title wins and their Champions League success. Alexander-Arnold replaced Conor Bradley in the 67th minute, with supporters chanting for Steven Gerrard and Bradley as that change was being made. Some supporters booed as he came on, and again, when he had his first touch. Now, the England international confirmed last week he'd be leaving Anfield when his contract expires at the end of June, but we learned last week that Real Madrid are trying to prize him away sooner so he can join their squad for the Club World Cup in mid-June. Teammate and fellow fullback Andy Robertson, quite diplomatic with his response after the game.
You know, I think his legacy at this club is there for everyone to see. The trophies he's won, the moments he's had in history will always be there. And it is, of course, it's an emotional decision. And you know, Trent, you know, it's not been an easy one. You know, it's not. But he's made the decision. And, it's not nice to see your friend, you know, get booed, and it wasn't nice. But like I said, we can't tell people how to act, but I can tell you how I feel about it. I'm extremely proud of him, of what he's done from this club. You know, I love him as a friend, I love him as a player, and, you know, he'll be missed. He'll maybe miss for me as one of my best friends in the game, so...
Yeah, more on this in the football show with Nathan after 9 p.m. And we're going to be speaking to Graham Hunter as well about the Clásico yesterday. Real Madrid manager Carlo Ancelotti, Real Madrid manager no more. Confirmation today from Brazil, Steve-O.
Yeah, not a greatly kept secret. Ancelotti leaving Real Madrid at the end of the season, become the new head coach of Brazil. The Italian has been one of the Spanish club's most successful manager. In fact, he's won the most trophies of any Real Madrid boss, winning 15 across 2 spells. He'll now become the first foreign manager of the Brazil men's team and will take up his post at the end of the month. And meanwhile tonight, Bristol City going to Sheffield United, trailing 3-0 in their English Championship playoff semi-final. That second leg kicks off at 8.
Finally then, Shane Lowry, not a great conclusion to the weekend for him, but he's feeling a little bit better today, is he?
Yeah, absolutely. He did break into the top 10 of golf's world rankings for the first time in his career, despite that disappointing finish at the Truist Championship in Philadelphia last night. The Offaly man played the final 3 holes in 2 over par to finish on 14 under, 2 shots adrift of eventual winner Sepp Straka. So that lifts Larry to number 10 in the world. Rory McIlroy remained second in the rankings after he finished in a tie for 7th on 10 under par, all ahead of the start of the US PGA Championship this Thursday.
This was a sickener for Shane Lowry.
That was a sickener. He should have won the tournament. You know, and like, he really lost it, you know, that's the thing about it. Like, he had a putt on 17 for birdie that, like, he must have misread by a yard, you know, and you're like, oh god, right, okay, that happens. And you know, it was got the par, then he hits the ball off the hospitality tent on his 18 drive after a perfect driving day. They were talking on commentary, it's like, this is one of the best driving displays I've ever seen. You know, he's like, he hits the ball off the hospitality tent, gets a massive bounce 40 yards down, like, you know, ends up with a good lie, couldn't be more lucky, hits an okay shot in, and then his next putt, like, he must miss it by another yard left. Like, he completely misread it. It's just a sign of a head gone, you know, so hopefully he's getting it all out of the way ahead of this week. But he is in great form, you know what I mean? Like, he's consistently playing well. This was one of those signature events on the PGA Tour. All the big boys were there, except Scheffler, I think. But most of all, the rest of them were there. And he played brilliantly. He was the class of the field nearly all week, and then just...
starting well, like the Masters, and not finishing nine. Well, so...
Yeah, no, it wasn't quite the Masters collapse.
Yeah, but, no, it wasn't. No.
Yeah. You do kind of think to yourself, is he playing his best golf on Sundays at the moment? Yeah. It doesn't seem to be the case.
All right, we will have more on this as the week goes on. Certainly looking ahead to Quail Hollow. And remember, you can check out Golf Weekly in this week's Monday episode. It's obviously out now with Nathan and the lads. Steve-O, thank you for tonight's news round. Mick, thank you very much. Thanks. We're going to be speaking to